You may find a delay due to construction in the following areas. I-275 in both directions between 6 Mile and Eureka Road, southbound Southfield Freeway at Michigan Avenue. Also on southbound Southfield Freeway at I-94, please use caution in all those areas. You'll find the eastbound I-96 Jeffries Ramp to eastbound I-94 is closed down for a long-term project until late July. Try the westbound Jeffries Ramp to eastbound I-94 as your main alternate. I am Pete Spivak, WJR, traffic and weather first.
Rain will increase in coverage tonight with a low down to 45, then windy to a lot warmer for the weekend. Clearing will take place on Saturday with a high near 82, wrapping up the weekend on Sunday a cloudy afternoon with a high close to 80. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Jeff Maher on News Talk 760 WJR.
Live from Detroit, it's the Darren McCarty Show. The NFL Draft Preview Edition on 760 WJR. Now sitting in here are Sean Bolegian and Bill Keenest.
So glad you could join us on a Friday night. What else are you going to be doing on a rainy Friday night, huh? Right, Bill?
That's right. And I think the Tigers did us a favor because they knew how many fans wanted to listen to the draft show. Who are the Lions going to take with those top three picks? And I heard Miggy is a fan too, so he was curious about what we might be able to share with him. I think he's got some poll or some fantasy draft thing that he's dealing with. So
he's looking forward to it. Of course, Bill Keenest, Eric Dortch in the house with us. Scott Mishoff's going to join us at about 7:30. We're going to be talking draft with Scott. You know, he's got his ear to the ground. Bill had an opportunity to speak with Matthew Stafford today. I know Mitch Albom had an opportunity as well, but Bill, I'm interested in hearing your perspective with Matthew. Tell everybody why he was in town today in case people have not heard yet.
Right. And it's just so typical Matthew, so typical Kelly. They were in for a groundbreaking ceremony at the Save Detroit Lipke Center. They're going to add a 20,000 square feet educational facility. And what that Lipke Center has done for that area, it's transformed it. Mayor Duggan was there and he was talking about literally the property values have increased incrementally since they reformed and sort of really resurrected that center. And when you see those children and you talk to those children, you get chills, if not tears in your eyes, because these are They had two speakers there, two of the participants in the center, and they both talked about knowing that we can come here and get a warm meal. Think about that. Mm. How many listeners out there have ever thought about not getting a warm meal? And kudos to Mitch Albom, kudos to Matthew, kudos to so many people that have made that reality, and the impact is generational, obviously, because for every current generation, you positively impact. So many others are touched in a positive way. And it's why I love Matthew Stafford. I mean, yeah, he's a great quarterback, but he and Kelly are two of the most special, selfless, caring people our community has ever known. And seeing them there today was like they never left. I mean, the comfort, they looked fantastic. And they were there for the right reason, to give back. Too much is given, much is required, and they're a billboard for that. They are truly a billboard for giving.
Just classy people, no doubt about that. So interested to hear Bill's conversation. Bill, I've been told you and Matthew talked about a myriad of things. So including his draft day, as I understand it.
Well,
I that came up.
Yeah, we went back and I just asked him, I said, if you can go back to 2009 this week before the draft, I mean, can you just sort of put yourself back in that mindset, what you were thinking? And he knew that we were a favorite, and the word that he used and has done in so many different ways is just embrace it. And, the one thing I wanted to bring up, I often get asked about, what's your favorite Matthew play, the favorite throw, whatever it is. But, I was going to mention the name Will Heller to him and see how he reacted. I didn't do it. But, when Matthew started that 09 season, we were on that losing streak, right? 16 the year before. And And we played the game we finally won was against Washington. And we had the ball late. And the thought was make Washington use their timeouts. We don't want to give it back to them. It was a 5 or 6 point game. So a touchdown would have won it for them. And I think it was second and 8 or 9. I don't know. But Matthew goes back and throws a seam pattern and just lays it perfectly in Will Helms' hands for like a 20-yard gain. And I think a lot of people saw that and said, this kid is special, because it's a risky pass, but you know, no risk it, no biscuit, right?
Yeah.
As Bruce Arians has said and made famous. And that was a classic example of that. And of course we won the game, and there were so many moments and memories like that for him, but he and Kelly are just so happy. You can see it. They look as good as I've ever seen them. And I was just so happy that he had reached out to me this morning and invited me down just to see them more than anything.
Well, as any draft year can prove, the draft can change the fortunes of your franchise very quickly. But when you have the picks like the Lions do this year, and it's interesting you bring up 2009. I think 1988 is another great example that you brought up, Bill.
Yeah.
When you're talking about pick two, when you're talking about three in the top 34, and I don't care if it's 32 and 34 that complete those three.
Yeah.
You have three picks like that. Simply put, you can change the trajectory of your franchise quick, fast, in a hurry. And Bill, let's go way back to, I guess, our day, so to speak. I think a lot of people think the greatness of the Lions started in 1989 when they took that running back out of Oklahoma State. I'm going to say that maybe the building blocks were laid a year earlier when the Lions had pick three, pick 29, and pick 32. And boy, did they make those picks count.
Yeah. And if you look, you know, even deeper into that draft, I mean, guys like William White and unfortunately the tragic story of Eric Andelsack, who was on his way to a Pro Bowl career. But the 88 draft, we actually had the second pick like the Lions do today going into this draft. And the as I recall, Kansas City and the Raiders both wanted Neil Smith, you know, all-time great defensive tackle. So appropriately, we leveraged that. You know, well, you know, there might have been a call made to the Raiders and say, you know, Kansas City really wants us. Or there might have been a call made to Kansas City. You know, Oakland really wants us. You want to dance, so to speak. So Kansas City danced with us, gave us their second pick, which ended up being Chris Spielman. So we draft Benny Blades, who I've said on this show many times is the ultimate warrior for the Lions in that era. No one was better at being a pro and at being a leader in that locker room. Chris Spielman, four-time Pro Bowler, obviously everybody knows Chris. Pat Carter was a pretty productive tight end. He played in the NFL for 10 years, played with the Rams. And then, like I said, you go down the list. William White was a starting corner for or a safety for us during the glory years. Eric Andelsack, like I mentioned. So there were some – that was a draft that really helped springboard things. It really did. And then you know, the year after that, you know, we had another high pick. And, oh, by the way, Barry Sanders, right? And then Mike Utley, another tragic, you know, remembrance. But nonetheless, Mike was on his way to a 10, 15-year career, Pro Bowl caliber player. Ray Crockett, who had a great career. Lawrence Pete, Rodney Pete, in the sixth-rounder quarterback. So you can really lay the foundation for years to come with a productive draft. And the Lions haven't had, you look at where the top three picks are, the Lions haven't had, you know, three picks like this for a long time. Actually, we were talking about them earlier. You go back to 2009.
Yep.
And the team did have a similar reality with, you know, Matthew number one. And then we had number 20.
Yep.
And took Brandon Pettigrew, who was a very productive player for us. You look at his first 3 or 4 years, and he put up some great numbers. And then Louis Delmas, who, you know, was on his way, but the injury bug got him.
Yep.
So 2009 certainly laid a foundation for the team, and every expectation is that this year we'll do the same thing.
Well, we're going to look at this draft, get out the magnifying glass, if you will, at about 7:32. Scott Bischoff, who does such a fantastic job for just a ton of places analyzing the draft. It's become a year-round thing. Bill, that's something you and I need to get into a little bit, because we did not grow up in an era where it was a year-round thing. It wasn't even a day thing. Believe it or not, for you youngins out there.
I mean, can you
we'll get into that, and we'll hear from Matthew Stafford as well. Draft show on a Friday night. Bill Keenis, Eric Thorch in the house, Scott Bischoff joining us after 7:30 right here on 760 WJR.
Welcome back to more NFL Draft Preview on the Darren McCarty Show on WJR. Once again, here are Sean Belegian and Bill Keenis.
Well, if you listen to Gridiron Wrap during the season here on 760 WJR, you know, not only do we talk about things that are happening in the present day, but one of the great things about having Bill Keenis in the house is I lived a lot of this stuff. Bill had a front row seat for a lot of this stuff. And boy, I'll tell you what, you know, that's the one thing in talking to people, and we appreciate everybody listening and your comments and everything. They love some of those trips down memory lane. And Bill, during the break, you were telling me about Benny Blade's introduction to the Detroit Lions.
Yeah. So back then, believe it or not, the draft went 12 rounds, and it was on one day, Saturday and Sunday. Let me back up. I did go through a one-day draft in 1983 when I was with Washington, but that was because the NFL was feeling some heat from the USFL. So there was one year where the draft was all 12 rounds was in one day. That was 83, because the NFL did not want any players not drafted that first day to be more willing to go to the USFL, because the UFL was just waiting to call those players that weren't drafted. We want you. We want you. So but in 88, Benny's year, we had the high pick, and we were coming off a season 87 that was the worst attendance year in Silverdome history. We averaged like 37,000 fans a game, and it was not good, not good. So we draft Benny, and we're going to bring him to town on Sunday. And our headquarters are at the Silverdome. You know, all the draft preparations were done at the Silverdome. So it just so happened that Sunday, the Pistons had their last regular season home game. And, you know, as we recall, the Pistons used to, you know, put a lot of tickets on the street. You know, you go to Marathon gas station, you know, buy a Twinkie and a fill up a gas, and you got four tickets. So I knew there was going to be a huge crowd at the Silverdome. And I thought, what a better way for us to introduce Benny to our fan base than have him be introduced to the Piston fans at the Silverdome. But I think I was, smart enough, I guess, or nervous enough as a relatively young PR guy. We weren't held in great esteem by the fans in this market back then. Okay. You know, we were pretty bad. So I went to my dear friend, God rest his soul, Matt Dobek, the PR guy for the Pistons. And Matt was wonderful. And we did a lot of things together over the years with the two teams. But I said, Matt, I got an idea. But it's going to take some cooperation on your part. You know, Benny's coming in tomorrow afternoon he's going to land at like 2 o'clock. We're going to have the press conference, blah, blah, blah. And the Pistons game started at 6, as I recall. So I said, here's what I'd like to do. I don't want Benny just being introduced, because I'm nervous, because, okay, it's the Lions. They hear Lions, you know, there might be some booing. So I said, here's what I would love to propose to you. Isaiah Thomas was as big a star as there was in all sports back then. So my idea was, how about I'll write a little script, and Isaiah will welcome and introduce Benny to Motown. No one's booing Isaiah Thomas, right? And so the PA announcer, Ken Calvert, or whoever it was back then, will read this introduction, and it will be, okay, Piston fans, Will you join Isaiah Thomas in welcoming Benny Blaze? Blah, 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 blah. So everybody thought it was going to work. Good idea. Blah, blah, blah. And the idea was, we got one of, remember the Beverly Hills Cop jacket?
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, Eddie Murphy, the movie came out, I think, the year before. So we were going to have Benny give Isaiah a jacket. And Isaiah was going to present Benny with his Lions jersey. So we're all set, right? Just a minor problem. Benny was flying commercial. Okay. It wasn't a private jet and there was a problem with the flight. It got delayed. It was whatever it was. So now Benny's next flight, the flight he's on is going to land at like 5 o'clock at Metro. He's got to get all the way to Silverdome by 6 at the latest. I might be a little off on the timing. Okay, now it was a different world back then when it came to security at airports. We all know that. So I went to one of our dear friends, God rest his soul as well, Fred McLeod. He was a Channel 2, and they did our preseason games back then. I said, Freddie, I got an idea. I got a plan for you. I got a deal. And every station in town had a helicopter back then. For the weather, every station had their own chopper. So I said, Freddie, you want an exclusive with Benny Blaze? You'll get him before anyone. And he goes, well, heck yeah. I go, okay, well, here's what we need. We need you to get your chopper. And we had a way to get on the tarmac. I don't know how we did it at Metro, but the bottom line was, we're going to get the plane landed. Benny's going to come off the plane. Your chopper is going to be within walking distance. You can be on the chopper, Fred. You can have your cameraman on the chopper, Fred. You're going to bring him back to the Silverdome, land on the practice field, and I'll be waiting there with a golf cart to go down the tunnel, literally onto the court, where 30,000 fans are in the Silverdome cheering the Pistons on for their final regular season game. And Fred was fantastic. Absolutely, I'll do that.
That's so awesome.
That's what happened. And they literally, the chopper, and I'm like, no cell phones back then, right? So you're at the mercy of just, you know, trust and all that. And the chopper lands, and I go, come on, Benny, let's go. And he gets on the cart, and we just fly down the ramp. That was a pretty long ramp, as you recall.
Yeah.
And I had alerted the security at the bottom to open the garage door. And we literally went right out, you know, as close to the court as we could get. And Isaiah was phenomenal. The crowd went crazy. So just one of those little behind the scenes things.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Wow. And you know, I say it all the time, but Bill, you and I grew up in an era where we couldn't watch the draft. We had to look at the results of the draft in the newspaper the next day. That's unfathomable for youngsters like Eric Dorch. I tell my son that all the time. It's not like I could go on the internet. I had to wait until the next day to see who the Lions took, for goodness sake.
Yeah, I mean, obviously no TV. That started in the mid to late 80s when ESPN, who was still, you know, a relatively young network, about 10 years old at the time, and they started televising it. And I'll share one other story from the 1990 draft. So, you know, now obviously the NFL has upwards of 20 potential first rounders on site at the draft. They'll be, you know, in Detroit in a couple of years, the potential first rounders. But back then what ESPN would do is they would look at the top, however many picks. Obviously they wanted someone that would cooperate with the reality of a TV station being in your family's living room. Right. So we had drafted Barry the year before, the run and shoot offense, Miles Davis, June Jones. And so Andre had just won the Heisman and broke every single season passing record in NCAA history. Wayne had went and scouted him, did his workout. So, I mean, it's almost the slam dunk that we're going to draft Andre Ware. Okay. So I'm in the draft room, and we did have TV in the draft room that year. And I'm watching ESPN, and, you know, the pick, Andre was the 7th pick, I believe. So they just announced pick number 6. And Wayne, again, my recollection was, we don't need to wait. Let's just turn the pick in. So they are starting to interview Andre because the expectation. So I mean, here I am. I'm in my third or fourth year as a PR guy, and I'm in a room with Mr. Ford and Bill Ford and Wayne and everybody. And I saw TV. I realized the potential for great theater. Okay. So I just shouted, wait, don't turn the pick in. And everybody looked at me and I thought somebody was going to, who are you? What are you doing? You're going to lose your job. I go, Wayne, they're going live to Andre. You call him. Wayne was going to call him anyways. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Call him and it'll be on live TV. The whole country's going to see Wayno talking to Andre. And as you can recall, Sean, that's all I needed to say to Wayne was, hey, Wayne, the whole country's watching you. So Wayne says, absolutely. So they start to interview Andre, and then someone says they got a phone call, and it's live. It's being shown live. Andre grabs the phone, and it was like, Motown here. Coach, Motown, here I come. And that's how it was announced. So,
oh, is that great?
Yeah.
I remember your pit guy was one of those guys that people were in their front room, Mark Spindler, in the long wait until he got picked. And
he didn't until they went off the air.
Yeah, I remember that.
We picked him like within 2 or 3 minutes of ESPN going off the air. And I'll tell you what, that was devastating for Mark. But he came in the next day and he did one of the very best media sessions of any rookie, of any player that we ever had. He just, you know, it was what it was, and he took it. And the media, the beat writers, everybody loved him. And he had a wonderful career for us, us, the Jets, and then came back to us.
Sure did. No doubt about that. Got a chance to work with him a little bit in this business as well.
There
this
you go.
Dog. So, listen, we're up against a break. I'll tell you what, we will play Bill Keenest's conversation with Matthew Stafford coming up at about 7:45. But as mentioned, we have Scott Bischoff scheduled. Talk a little bit about what to expect in the first round, what he's hearing. You know better than anybody, Bill. Right now, this is what we not so affectionately call lying season. That's not L-I-O-N. That's L-Y-I-N.
Yeah, no doubt. Yep,
don't believe a word that you're hearing right now, folks.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
We'll have Scott Bischoff try to navigate those waters for us. When we come back, it is the draft preview. So glad you could join us on a Friday night here on 760 WJR.
Welcome back to more NFL Draft Preview on the Darren McCarty Show on WJR. Once again, here are Sean Bolegian and Bill Keenest.
Always love talking to this guy. If you listen to the Lion coverage here on 760 WJR in the past, he was always a part of our draft shows out at Allen Park. That was always such a fun time with Brandy and Dan Miller. He does a great job. For Football Guys, for Woodward Sports, he's a member of the Professional Football Writers Association. He is a friend. Let's welcome him into the show. Scott Bischoff kindly joining us on a Friday night. First of all, Scotty, thanks for joining us. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Great, Scott. Fantastic. You know, we were just joking, Scott, and Bill Keenest knows this better than anybody. This is lying season, not L-I-O-N, L-Y-I-N-G. Are you hearing some whoppers a mere 6 days before the draft, Scott?
No. I mean, I've been hearing lots of interesting stuff in the run-up to this point. But, you know, at this point, it's quiet. We're too close. And I don't know, Bill, you would know more than anybody being kind of on the inside of that stuff. I'm sure, you know, being affiliated with a team, it's a very different thing happening. Right. But as far as media and scouts and that kind of stuff, no, it's been unusually quiet this year. I will say that.
Yeah. This was about the time frame when the term was, okay, we're all in the cave. Okay. And it's bedrock and it's a big boulder in front of the cave. No one's getting in, no one's getting out. Okay. But I do think, and I know, actually, I've got some pretty crazy stories about that as well. But when there's a unique situation, GMs, agents perhaps, but certainly GMs, and they all have contact with the media, okay? And if there's something that they believe is beneficial, then they take a page out of Sean's book about what season it is. And maybe it's exaggerating a little bit, or, hey, this is what I'm hearing, and I mean, just go back to the, was it Lyle Collins, the offensive tackle the night before a draft, a photo shows up of him smoking a bong, right? Wasn't that the player?
That was Laramie Tunsil, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. And so that was done strategically. That wasn't a mistake or a, you know, oh, by the way, sorry, I did that. That there was strategy behind that. So I think, you know, in with the proliferation of the media, and the one thing that I know Sean and I have talked about this before, what I have seen over my career is, and this is not just the Lions, any major announcement, okay, any major announcement is usually done by the Adam Schefters of the world. You think about that. All the major announcements. So it's a give and take. It's a you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. And Ian Rapoport and others. Okay. You look at all the major announcements. That's where they come from. Not the team, not the player. And so the, you know, there's a relationship, a reality to it there. So we did used to go into the cave and it was literally dark. But I think in recent years, there's been more out there than in the past. Then you just have to, you know, you have to just, you know, check it and double check it, do your due diligence, because it's anybody's guess at this time.
Yeah, and some of that too is like understanding your source or sources and understanding like what their intentions are. Because I can promise you, if an agent is talking to you about something, there's a reason why.
Yeah,
you know, yes. he's trying to get information to nudge a player a certain way, and you know, or wants something out there that may not be true on a player who's competing, you know, for the same draft slot kind of thing.
Right.
Last year was really interesting because there was a lot more, even though it was a different draft with the COVID year and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It just seemed like there was a lot more knowns. You know, we knew that Kyle Pitts was going to go early. We knew that the quarterbacks were going to go where they were going this year because of, I think, sort of the blandness of the class, especially at the top. It's anybody's guess. It really is. And I think some of the things that happen will make sense. It always does in hindsight. Some of the things you hear, like I don't know, as an example, like Jacksonville, I am firmly in the camp that they're taking a tackle at one, and that some of this other stuff is like you've said, you know, we're trying to manipulate the situation to get somebody to come up to one because we don't love being at one kind of thing. So if they're stuck there, I could see them, you know, taking a tackle and then, you know, explaining to the media that we did everything we could to get out of that first pick, but the best situation for our franchise going forward was to take a tackle to help with Trevor Lawrence. And in that scenario, then the Lions are faced with having a choice of, you know, multiple edge players and potentially a quarterback. And, you know, it's not a bad situation for the Lions to be in, but, overall it's been a unique year with maybe not such premium talent at the top and some confusion around what's going to happen, you know, at one.
Yeah. Scott, you opened the door, you put out the scenario. So I'm going to make you live in it. Jacksonville takes the tackle with number one. What does that do for the Lions? Is it a clear cut number one or number two pick for us? Does it kind of make us have to reevaluate and think a little bit?
I wouldn't think there's any thinking involved because I'm sure the Lions have played that scenario out in their heads. I mean, it's not, you know, if I can think about it, I'm positive they are. And it, and then it becomes, you know, you know, it's a scenario where if you're looking at pass rusher, do you want the, you know, the hometown kid who's, you know, more of a high floor. There's no such thing as a can't miss player, but you know, you kind of know what you're getting with him. Where do you want that? Or do you want to take a potential swing, you know, a little swing at the fences at a player who's got a, you know, a more expansive ceiling in Kayvon Thibodeau? And then the whole Trayvon Walker thing is out there, and that's probably a conversation that requires, that's a long conversation. But to me, it's, you know, in the scenario where tackle goes one, it's do you want to play it safe and take a player like Aiden Hutchinson who's going to give you, you know, he's going to defend the run? I just don't know he's going to give you as much ceiling as a pass rusher, or do you want to take, a little more of a swing and more of a gamble on a player with Thibodeau? And, you know, there's you can easily make the argument to take either one.
Okay. Scott Bischoff kindly joining us here at Draft Preview 760 WJR. Scott, Bill Keenis brought up two draft years in Lion history that I'm sure you remember, you know, where you can change the fortunes of your franchise quick, fast, in a hurry if you have three picks in the top 34. And a couple of the drafts that he brought up, the 88 draft when the Lions had pick a number 3, 29, and 32 got Blade, Spielman, and Carter. And the one that you and I were working together, as a matter of fact, 2009, they had 1, 20, and 33, Stafford, Pettigrew, Delmas. Obviously, you go 3 for 3, or you even go 2 for 3, and you're talking about taking this franchise in a different direction, quick, fast, in a hurry.
Yeah, 2 for 3, you'd be cooking with gas. You really would, and even if, honestly, yeah. even if you missed it too, because the strength of this draft is right in the area where they're picking with 32 and 34, and you know, wide receivers become a, obviously, it goes without saying, it's a premium position, but mm-hmm. you know, there are really good players who will be available at 32 or 34
right.
at wide receiver. Safety yeah. is another
yeah.
position where. You know, you could find your, you could walk into a, you know, a starting yeah. safety, and those are the players who really put you over the top, you know, when this thing gets all rounded out and finished.
You know, Scott mentioned something prior about, you know, believe me, the teams know what they're going to do at this time. Every contingency has been played out. So for any listeners out there wondering about Draft Day, the movie, poor Seinfeld and do the opposite, okay? Because that is the most unrealistic atmosphere, you know, draft room, draft day, all that. I mean,
it don't take that away from me, Bill. Don't take that away.
Well, you know, we can all dream and fantasize about it. But no, Eric's right. Every contingency has been played over, and it's rare. It's rare. It's not, you know, never say never, but it's rare that a team doesn't have the plan for what happens in front of them.
Yeah, especially being at 2. I mean, you know, last year might yeah. have been a different story. You're picking at 7, so there are yeah. 6 wild cards in front of you. This year it's 1, and yeah. whether it's, you know, Malik Willis at 1 or Hutchinson at 1 or Thibodeau at 1 or Trayvon Walker or the tackles, the Lions will be ready and prepared to, you know, to act and yeah. react to that. And, you know, one of the things that's, you know, in a good scenario, the Lions are, they've built up some capital amongst their fans and people like me, truthfully, with what they've done, and especially how they conducted themselves in year one with what they did in the draft, and grabbing, you know, Penei Sewell was a bit of a gift, but still it was a good pick. You know, finding Amon-Ra St. Brown and some of the interior defensive tackles you took makes a lot of sense. And what the moves they've made do, they all kind of string together to make a bunch of sense. So I'm hopeful that we as fans and, you know, people following the team can be excited about what they do on day 1, 2, and 3 this year too.
With that second overall pick, Scott, do you see this, you see them making this pick, or is this something where you could see them choosing to deal back, try to add more draft stock, to kind of add them more chances to throw darts at the dartboard?
I think it's the easy sort of mail it in answer is to say they'll make the pick, because that's generally, you know, 99% of the time you don't trade down.
Absolutely.
I would love a scenario in which the Lions do trade down and, you know, grabbing capital in the future, grabbing another first round pick next year to have 3 of them. If you're not addressing the quarterback this year, would be a wise move. It's just a matter of, you know, who's on the board, what are they coming up for, and how far do you go back? But that's more of a dream, like, you know, like Bill said, it's a fantasy type scenario where it's super unrealistic to think that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Scott, every year I say this to you, and every year I'm proven correct. So I'm calling my shot again, and for the sake of us continuing our old bit, you know what I'm going to bring up to you. No matter what you hear about how poor this quarterback class is, multiple quarterbacks are going in the first round. Set your watch to it. Who do you think is going to go first? Do you have a general feeling who's going to go first? All of a sudden, people are talking about Sam Howell today. I was perusing, and Sam Howell's name's back out there. Is there a
pecking order? Everybody's tired of talking about Malik Willis. Yeah, right. Right? Everybody's tired of it. No,
is there a pecking order out there, Scott?
No, it's because some of this is the whole fit and finish about where you play and what kind of a quarterback you're looking
right.
for. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, if you're in a place where it's cold weather and you're dealing with wind, you're probably not all that intrigued by a player like Kenny Pickett. You know, you just might not be. You want the more, you know, the more strong-armed quarterback. If you're looking for pure upside, like franchise-altering upside, that's Malik Willis. And then there's, you know, Desmond Ridder is a bit of a finished product coming out of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Matt Corral is interesting from Ole Miss. You know, some of these guys, you know, I mean, Sean, you're right. I think there will be multiple quarterbacks who go earlier than everybody thinks.
Right.
And it's a product of how quarterback driven and how quarterback needy a lot of NFL teams are. I mean, the Lions are in an interesting position. They have a quarterback that they're okay with. Obviously, you would love for him to be the guy, right? And Sean, I know where you stand on that. And it's unrealistic to think that he is the player that's going to take them over the top, but he's stable. And he played pretty well over the back half of the season. And it's, you know, his contract becomes, really a nice enough contract next year that I think you can move him for, you know, multiple picks, maybe not first round pick, but I think you can get a 2 and a 3 for him kind of thing where, you know, other teams are not in that situation where they're scrambling at that position. And as bad as people want to portray this class to be, it's still, people want quarterbacks and teams need quarterback play. They just do.
Scott, always a pleasure. Make sure you follow Scott on Twitter at Bischoff_Scott. Did I get that right, Scott?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. And I know how busy this season is for you. So appreciate you taking the time and look forward to seeing some of your stuff out there on the web.
I appreciate you guys having me on, and you guys have a good night and a great weekend.
Thank you, Scott.
Scott Bischoff kindly joining us. When we come back, Bill Keenis has a conversation with Matthew Stafford. Don't go anywhere. We'll have that for you next right here on 760 WJR.
Welcome back to more NFL Draft Preview on the Darren McCarty Show on WJR. Once again, here are Sean Baligian and Bill Keenis.
So glad you could join us Friday night. Bill Keenis, you had a chance to catch up with Matthew Stafford today.
Yes, sir. And it was great seeing him and great chatting with him. And I started by saying, Matthew, do you ever think I'd be interviewing you for WJR Radio? it was wonderful. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah,
let's hear part one of what is a four-part conversation with Bill Keenis and Matthew Stafford.
Now, obviously, today at the Say Detroit Lipke Center event, you and Kelly, you know, your roots are deep and they're even deeper after the commitment today. And just watching you and your interaction with the kids and the message, it gives me chills, but it doesn't surprise me. It's why you're different. I mean, I love you because of the person you are, let alone the athlete. And I think everybody here today would say the same thing.
Yeah, it's a special group. You know, I said up there that, you know, my favorite part about playing football is being part of a team. And this is such an unbelievable team to be a part of here. You know, with Mitch's help and Say Play, what we've been able to accomplish, what he's been able to accomplish in the city of Detroit cannot be, overlooked. I mean, it's an unbelievable thing what he's able to do with his organization. I'm just happy to be a part of it. And then being able to, you know, really see the positive impact you can have on kids and you know, through a long period of time. You know, this isn't something where you come out one weekend and throw the football around and you leave and everybody gets a t-shirt. You know, these kids are getting education, these kids are getting opportunity, these parents are getting a place to drop their kids off and feel safe about it and feel great about what they're getting to learn and accomplish, and that's something that'll last for a long time. And this new endeavor is just going to, you know, allow it to expand, you know, exponentially and be able to help that many more kids and that many more families and also adults, you know, get job training and things like that to go and support for their families. So it really is an entire, you know, community center that we're really proud of.
Just great stuff from Matthew. Bill also had a chance to talk about Matthew about a few different things. So let's get to part two now.
Okay, Matthew. You know, a week or so away from the draft, and here we are back in Detroit. And I can't help but go back to, you know, this time frame in 2009, you know, a week before the draft, what you were thinking, and if you can even, you know, go back that far.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long time ago for me. But I just remember excitement, you know, excitement to be living out a dream that I've always wanted to do, and that was play in the NFL. And I knew, you know, I had a chance to be drafted to Detroit and be a part of the Lions organization, which to me was going to be a huge challenge and one that I was excited to embrace and you know, try to, you know, jumpstart a team and an organization that, you know, had some recent struggles at that point. I just remember feeling so excited and so pumped to, you know, to be drafted and be living that dream.
Absolutely. And I remember, obviously, the focus on you. You know, is Matthew going to be able to start as a rookie? And I would literally laugh at some of the you know, commentary or the you know, the writings and the media saying, well, you don't want to shell shock him. You know, he's too young. And I'm thinking, this is a guy who won a state title at one of the best high schools in Texas. He's starting as 14 years old, a freshman, goes to the SEC, starts as a true freshman. And with all due respect, I didn't think pressure's relative to your experience and age. And I thought if anybody can handle it, it was you, and you did.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it's something that I wanted. You know, I didn't want to sit there and learn on the, you know, on the practice squad or anything like that. I wanted to be thrown in the fire and see what it was all about, because to me, that's the best way to learn is through experience. And I was, you know, lucky to be surrounded by some coaches that were willing to give me a long leash and go out there and figure it out and figure out what, you know, what's going to work in this league, what's not. I had a bunch of, you know, tough times as a rookie and as a second year player through injuries and losses and, you know, failed games and things of that nature, but it made me, you know, who I am today.
It's amazing when you think about it that was 13 years
ago.
Yeah,
it really
Bill,
is.
Bill and Matthew talking about opportunity.
Okay, one final thing, and it's kind of ironic because you're with a team that hasn't invested a lot in draft picks lately, but it's worked. It doesn't matter how you do it, it's if you do it, and yeah. Obviously, you guys have, but what advice would you give to especially the quarterbacks, you know, the first, second round projections at quarterback? What advice would you give to those young men?
You know, I think embrace it, and that's all of it. You know, that's the great times, that's the bad times, and know both of them are coming. I've been playing for, you know, 13 years now, and I've had unbelievable moments that I'll never forget, and I've had terrible moments that I'll never forget, and all of it makes you who you are and what you are as a player, and the ability to understand that, accept it, continue to work your tail off to try and be a better player and a better person, a better teammate, and all that is huge. But just embrace the opportunity and understand that, you know, it doesn't get you know, it's not an easy thing. Yeah. You know, it's not an easy thing we get to do. It's difficult. It's hard, but that's what makes it special. And the guys that can understand that, come to work every single day, you know, with that in mind and understanding is it's going to serve them well in the long run.
Yeah. Speaking of embracing things, you're back in Detroit for the first time, and I, you know, what do you feel? What are the emotions?
It's been amazing. You know, we're staying, you know, in Birmingham, Michigan. I walk in to get a coffee this morning. I had about five or six cars stop in the middle of the road and roll their window down and say, hey, you know, congratulations. Yeah. Yeah. And we love you and we love your wife. And yeah. I'm listening to her podcast right now or whatever it is. I mean, it was pretty unbelievable. So, you know, the reception we've gotten when we came back was really special to us and something that means a lot considering how much Detroit means to us.
Great. That's awesome.
And, Bill, we would be remiss if you didn't ask Matthew about, well, a certain Super Bowl, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Let's hear it.
Yeah,
Matthew.
I'd be obviously remiss if I don't ask you about this past season. You know, you started with the bang on Sunday night against the Bears, you know, beat the Bucks a few weeks later. And then I remember seeing you at Green Bay, and it was a little rough because of injuries and just the reality of a long season. And then obviously I'm biased, I'm partial, but what you did in the playoffs was unprecedented. And I love the fact that for you, it's just all about the team. And that team seemed to respond at the right time, you know, all three units. And I mean, did you envision any of that, you know, when the trade happened? What were your, as you look back on it, I guess, what are your thoughts?
I mean, what an amazing journey, as every season is. You know, it really is just this series of ups and downs, and this season was no different. An incredible group of guys that I got to go to work with every single day, coaching staff, players, all of it. Such a special thing to be a part of. As far as envisioning it, to be honest with you, no. I knew that I was going to be in LA, I was going to be a Ram, I was going to get to play with a great team and, you know, for a great coach and all that. But I just wanted to enjoy it. You know, I didn't want to sit there and set an expectation on this, that, and the other, what was going to be, you know, a success or deemed a success or a failure. I just wanted to go in and embrace it. I love playing this game. I love competing no matter where we are, what the circumstances are. And that was the, you know, the most fun part for me, was just getting able to compete on those huge stages and be a part of a team that was able to succeed is icing on the cake.
Okay.
Just such a good guy, Bill, and the mark that he left on this area. I mean, all that needs to be said is what he encountered this morning, just getting a cup of coffee and people stopping and honking and talking to he and Kelly.
I think it really is unique, the relationship Matthew has with the city of Detroit and its fans. It's special. They appreciate genuine people. They appreciate hard work. They appreciate people that are committed to the city. And Matthew was all of that. And the amount of things he has done, like today at Lipke, impacting the lives of those children, he and Kelly have done scores more that no one even knows about. And that's why we love the guy.
Great
stuff. And Kelly as well.
Absolutely. Hey, great stuff, Bill. Always a pleasure. I know we'll get together sooner rather than later, whether it be a guest or Gridiron Wrap again. Eric Dortch, thank you. Scott Bischoff, thank you. And, of course, Blake, we appreciate you as well. Thanks for joining us here tonight. Draft 6 days away. Can't wait to see what the Lions will do. And we'll talk about it right here on 760 WJR.